All right, so Bert, there was an interesting presentation at ASCO by Dr. Van Hoff looking at, quote, actionable targets in pancreatic cancer. Can you comment on that?
Sure. You know, this is in some ways similar to one Alan talked about earlier, with emphasis being on what does actionable mean. But I think this is one of the larger cohorts of pancreatic cancer samples studied by a variety of methodologies, including immunohistochemistry for select targets, looking at protein overexpression, then looking at whole genome expression analysis with an Illumina bead chip and limited sequencing for common mutations. So they've just sort of given us a spectrum of mutations in really a relatively large number of patients. So, you know, over 1,000 for the immunohistochemistry and about 450 for the whole genome analysis and about 800 for the select mutations, which included common things like KRAS, EGFR, PIK3CA, and BRAF. And so really they've cataloged for us some amplifications. I think, you know, this is a test that can be ordered clinically. This is the KRAS-DX test. So obviously this test provides a person with a very large amount of information, I would say the majority of which I wouldn't know what to do with. They have identified, I think, some potentially actionable targets, although I think you have to leave the word potentially in there. Some that stood out, one I mentioned before, is that the rate of KRAS mutation is a little less than we thought in the past, about 73%. And this is a fairly large sample, so I think that's probably a more stable number than we've seen from other studies. One other interesting thing they saw was amplification of HER2-new in about 10%. So I think that may well be something we should think about for studies, although I don't know that I'd consider that actionable in an individual patient if we ordered that. What I don't know about this study is how these samples were obtained. I suspect that many of them were obtained surgically. So these may be patients who, at least some of whom, never went on to develop metastatic disease. So I think if we were going to think about this clinically, we'd like to have actual metastatic tumor samples. And for the average pancreas cancer patient, it's hard to get enough tissue to do all of these assays. So this is a sort of a treasure trove of information, genetic information, and especially expression information about these tumors. In terms of does it move the field forward right now, I don't think so, partly because this is not attached to any outcomes from specific therapies. So that's really the huge missing piece here that will need to be worked on with future studies.
So Axel, any more hints in terms of the biology of pancreatic cancer, in terms of why it's so resistant to systemic therapy, and, you know, maybe what kinds of strategies might be more promising for the future?
You know, when you take a patient to an autopsy after they die from pancreas cancer, and I recently did that, a patient who died on service, and the residents and fellows actually came to the surgery room, and actually we did an autopsy on this patient, which we don't do often enough, I guess. And I was struck again by how hard, how fibrotic the tissue is. You could knock on the tumor, it's like knocking on wood. This is not a highly vascularized, soft tissue where chemotherapy easily penetrates in. And this has been known for quite some time. So this fibrotic component of the cancer could be an impediment to delivery of chemotherapy. And we've tried to target that with hedgehog inhibitors. They work amazingly well in very intriguing results in animal models. But so far, they've really failed in clinical studies, you know, to show benefit when added to chemotherapy. But I do believe that a better understanding about the tumor-host interaction, what generates this very fibrotic, very hard, impenetrable tissue, I think is key to our understanding of how to better deliver chemotherapy into these patients.
So Axel, and I think this is true when it comes to the primary tumor. This is a bit different when we're talking about the metastatic tumors, because it's interesting, even with the chemotherapy studies, you actually do see a differential response between the primary, which seldom actually shrinks, when you see a good response with the metastatic tumors. So what applies to the primary tumor is a little bit different. And that goes to one of the first questions you were asking about, would you ever remove the primary plus the liver, let's say it's two liver mets. And anecdotally, I had few patients in the last few years where the primary was taken out, liver tumors were found during surgery. Those patients actually ended up with the best outcomes. Again, you know, subjectively, could have been super selection, but they've had some of the best outcomes I've had with patients. They've had good responses. I didn't have to worry about the primary. But these, again, these are anecdotal.
So getting back to this issue of next generation sequencing and more sophisticated assays like what we were just talking about, I'm just kind of curious, Charlie. I mean, anybody you ask about these things, the first thing they go is, we don't know what to do with the information. But on the other hand, you know, you put yourself in the position of a younger, healthier patient who's already gone through all the conventional options, whether it's pancreatic cancer, colorectal cancer, just on the possibility that maybe some kind of actionable lesion would be seen, maybe they could get into a trial. Can you buy into the thought of doing this kind of thing outside a trial setting?
Well, I think it's a discussion that happens frequently, and it's been the subject of a series of articles in the New York Times the past few weeks. We all want to find that anecdote where we find the needle in the haystack and a patient who would otherwise have done poorly did well because you found that person with the rare mutation that's actionable. Unfortunately, that is decidedly uncommon and is related to our discussion earlier today. We don't even know if that mutation matters in that disease, akin to BRAF and colon cancer. So I think this is going to be a process where first we characterize these tumors extensively using various technologies. So we look at the RNA, the DNA, the protein, so we really understand it. And then we sort of sort through that data to try to understand what the individual subsets or phenotypes are. And then presumably we do even small studies, pilot studies, where we take our best shot at that molecular phenotype.